And after an evaluation, he came back and said, well, with the type of injury, the type of operations that were done, there was nothing that he could do. And I wonder if maybe some of the other doctors felt somewhat the same way, but they didn't say that. And for a doctor to come and say that, that there's no hope for him to do anything, was very discouraging to us. We found that, there's other, there's much more to the story than that, and we found hope after that. But just drilled home to me that the idea of hope, some kind of future, and if we lose a loved one, I mean, what hope do we have besides the eternal life and life after death, and what God can offer us? Maybe a little bit harder to find hope in a situation like that, but I think we're going to have to find hope to find our way through. But anyway, coming back to grief, it says grief is triggered by loss. There's some kind of loss that's normally associated with it, whether it's a loss of health, diagnosis of serious sickness or life-threatening illness, death. It might be the loss of a dream, realizing that that what you had always wanted is not going to come to pass. Sometimes that can be very discouraging to people. And there's so many different levels of grief, so many different ways that it's experienced. Some people experience it in relationships. Boyfriend-girlfriend relationships get cut off one way or the other. Our world experiences many times with the marriage dysfunction and all that creates a tremendous amount of grief in the world around us. But we're so thankful that we have God and that we can trust in Him. Just as to start off, I would say a little bit that when there's considered to be several stages of grief, and to understand it or to help people through it, it might be helpful to understand just a little bit how that works. But there is a pattern. There's probably five, or depending who you talk to, seven different stages of grief that people often experience, and they might be in a set order, they're often in the similar order, but not always. And sometimes you might skip some steps or repeat some steps or have them in different order. So they're not all set, and different. Each person's journey is different. But they are common experiences for those going through grief. First one normally thought of is denial. And I mean, we could talk about the reasons God has probably made it this way and the benefits that come out of it, but suffice it to say that one of the first ones is denial, and I think that's beneficial to helping you establish the facts and find out what's happening, and it helps us to come to grips with reality, because often that reality has changed dramatically. The attitude of denial. We feel like it can't be true, fearing that if we accept it, it makes it real. And we know that doesn't change the facts at all, but it's a way that we come to grips with what's happened. And so you meet someone and you realize that they don't realize what happened. They don't realize the impact this is going to have on them. They don't realize what this really means. And we need to work through that. That's something that we need to work through, but it's a common experience. We probably experience or have seen people who didn't get worked through this as they should have. I had a close relative who was just a couple years older than me, and I looked up too highly. He was killed in a airplane accident, and his parents, it seemed like they lived in a state of denial. I was there at the funeral, but after the funeral, I don't think his name was mentioned for years. All the pictures in the house came down off the wall. They just didn't say anything about him. It just was not a subject to talk about. And that's not healthy. That's not healthy. But it's a feeling and an emotion you're going to have to deal with, and that's common, and that we face. Anger is the second one, and common emotion with dealing with grief is anger. Anger with God, wondering why He let this happen. For myself, that surprised me. I don't normally consider myself an angry person, but it was surprising the feelings of anger that you have in your heart when you go through an experience like that. Not necessarily at God. But there's things to work through in relation to that. And so if you're helping someone and they express anger, they feel angry at it's not unusual. It's something to work through. It's something to help them through. There's also, third one would typically be bargaining or kind of a reasoning. This can be trying to reason or negotiate with God if He will heal or take care of this situation. You know, we'll do this, or why did He let it? And it's many of the also includes many of the what-if questions. What if we would have done this different, or what if they would have done that different, or what if all these different questions that come through our mind, and we try to figure out how all it fits together, and if there couldn't have been something that would have made a difference in this situation. Along with that can be guilt and some of those things. But it's just trying to understand those and reason with God and understand it. That's a common experience. Depression would be the fourth one. When we come to the end of ourselves in a sense, we realize that we can't reason our way out of it. We can't change anything about it. It can bring feelings of depression. There's nothing that you can do to change the situation. Some people, this stage lasts longer than others, but it can be difficult. God makes us all unique. The last stage would be called acceptance, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're over it or that you've forgotten or anything like that. It means that you realize that life will never be the same, and we learn to go forward anyway. You learn to go forward and to that's going to be the way it is. When we're looking at someone who's grieving, it's just so easy for us who are a bit removed to get over it, to forget about the person, the one who is going on or whatever, and we think that the family, more immediate family, should maybe be able to get to that point too. But reality, and many times they feel like they're never going to forget. They're never going to be the same. And so acceptance means that they are going to, they have to come to a new normal, and they know they have to go on. But they feel very keenly that it will never be the same and that they will never forget. So anyway, those are kind of some of the steps that are common to grief and that you'll often experience, that you'll often see as you work with people who are suffering loss. And loss is something, grief is something that probably all of us are going to face to a greater or lesser degree as we go through life. God has ways of working with us and helping us to grow, mature, I don't know what all His purposes are, but this is one of the things that God sometimes takes us through to help us be what he wants us to be. Now, for a little bit more of a scriptural meditation, I want to turn you to turn to John, starting at 13, John 13. Grief is definitely a very integral part of man's experience. And yet in that, there's not a lot in the Bible that says, you know, this is the way it is and this is how you relate to it. And yet there's a lot of examples of people that went through grief. And the Psalms, Lamentations have a lot of details, a lot of expressions of man's grief and how they worked through that, how they dealt with it, how they found God. But I just was led to this. John 13 starts where Jesus knew that he was coming to the end of his life here on this earth. Starts out there in verse 1, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father. So this is within, you know, a day or two of his crucifixion. And he knew that his life was about over. And his disciples were going to grieve. They were going to face this grief that we're talking about. And he wanted to share his heart with them. He wanted to comfort them in their grieving. And I want to just pick out three things here from these several chapters. We're just going to pick out a couple verses through them, through chapter 13 through 17. But this is kind of the last deep conversation he had with his disciples before he was crucified. And he gave his disciples, I believe, what they needed to face his death and to come through the other side. John 13, verse 1. Now the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own, which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. Verses 33 to 35. Jump down to 33. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. Ye shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, whither I go, ye cannot come. So now I say unto you, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one for another. And then turn over to chapter 15, verses 10 through 13. Chapter 15, verse 10, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, than that a man lay down his life for his friends. We'll stop there. Jesus, in this passage, starts with his love for his disciples, and he confirms his love to them. Chapter 15 there, he talks, well, and also the verse we looked at in 13, he says, if you love me, then you're going to have love for each other. Well, okay, chapter 15, he says, if you love me, and abide in my love. In grief, it's essential that we have that vertical relationship with God, that we experience God's love, and also along with that, part of that is our love from our fellow brethren. He has designed it to be for that love to help carry us through. Ways maybe the world overemphasizes God's love, but going through a time like this, it's God's love that carries us through. The second thing he brings out in this passage, Look at chapter 15, verses 26 and 27. Last two verses. When the Comforter is come, whom I will send unto you from the Father, even the Spirit of truth, which proceedeth from the Father, he shall testify of me. And ye also shall bear witness, because ye have been with me from the beginning. And in 16, verses 7 through 14, chapter 16, verse 7. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth, it is expedient for you that I go away, for if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you, and when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin, and of righteousness, and of judgment, and of sin, because they believe not in me. Of righteousness, because I go to my Father, and ye see me no more. Of judgment, because the prince of the world is judged. I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now. Before his death. Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. He shall glorify me, for he shall receive of mine, and shall show it unto you. Seems the second thing that Jesus was pointing out in this passage was that his Comforter was going to come and would be with the disciples, would be with them. And Jesus in his, through the Holy Spirit, was going to be with them. They would not be alone. In grief, we often, being alone is often part of the agony or the problem of grief. But God loves us, and his Spirit has promised to be with us and to comfort us. And we hold that as a precious promise. He sends his Spirit and he teaches us. Third thing he speaks of here, as he gets into teaching about eternity. Chapter 14, verses 1 through 3. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. So as Jesus was getting ready to leave this earth, to leave his disciples behind, he told them about heaven and the mansions that he was preparing there, and that he was going to bring them to himself someday there. Talk about preparation for grief or overcoming grief. And I believe these three things can help us as we help others to overcome that. Remember God's love for us, the presence of his Comforter with us, his Holy Spirit with us, and think about eternity and heaven and the future we have with him. The fourth point I have in relation to this is not from this passage, but is taught in Scripture different places. I have it worded in a little bit more of an... There were several people through the Bible who did not relate well to grief, did not relate well to loss. You could think of Cain and Abel. Cain had I don't know if he felt it was his reputation or his future taken from him. In some way, he did not respond well to that. He reacted to that, and he reacted to God. King Saul felt that the kingdom should stay in his line. And when he realized that David was going to receive the kingdom and not Jonathan, not his sons, he reacted to that and he did all kinds of terrible things. He did not relate well to that loss that he was facing. And he didn't handle that grief. He allowed the anger of that grief to overcome him. And Job's wife would be the third example there. She We could say that she felt entitled to the children she lost, or whatever it was that she had her heart set on. And she, when God touched their lives, her reaction was to curse God and die, to advise Job to curse God and die. Some way, man's prideful spirit, devolves into bitterness and instability in the midst of grief. And I think the key is what Job said later, or what's recorded in Job 121. Let me just turn to that to have the words correctly. Job 121. He said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." The things that we have, the more we can hold those precious things lightly or hold them with an open hand so that God can take them out if he chooses to, the more, the better we can handle his will in our life. If we hang on to them too tightly, if our pride says that we need them, they're rightfully ours, we're not going to handle grief well. If you're relating to someone who's going through grief, you can't just tell them that. But somehow, if we can graciously, in time, help people to, I'd say, humble themselves before God, help them to realize that God has given and God has taken away. And yet we have to be very careful how we say that. But if we can keep that in mind, and if we can see that, and if we can gradually help them to understand that, I think that's one of the keys to working through grief. Rest of what I have would be maybe some practical pointers. And again, I want this to be, I don't want it to be a discouragement or a distraction or what means of keeping us from supporting those who are grieving. But someone who's going through grief, their heart many times is very raw and open. And it's just so easy for words that are well-intentioned, words that are true, words that are right, they can strike that heart and can cause pain. And we can't always know that, and I don't think we're always responsible for it. But if we can be aware of it, that a person going through grief, their heart is raw, their heart is bleeding, and just be sensitive and be careful a bit what you say. Now, that doesn't, again, we want to be careful to go and help. The most important part is to show that we care, to be there. And but be sensitive and be aware that our words can cause pain. And many times, and people are so different. People are so different sometimes. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I said about this message to one brother I know who went through the loss of a daughter due to cancer, and I know he's thought about the subject and had many thoughts on the subject. One of the things that was most meaningful to them was within hours of his daughter's passing, a former neighbor actually, came to their house, knew them well, and was helpful before, but they came to their house and took over the kitchen, took over household duties. And obviously that would need to be someone who's familiar with you, that you know reasonably well. But he really, really, really appreciated that, because the household duties were the furthest thing from their mind. and they were just so glad to have that taken care of and have his wife completely relieved. You just have to be sensitive to what people are comfortable with and what they're open to. But some way, if we can reach in, we're talking about supporting those who are grieving. Somehow, if we can be open to practical ways to reach in and help others. One piece of advice I came across was to, not just say, if you need anything, let us know. And I've said that many times. If you need anything, let us know. But if you can think of practical ways that they might need help and offer to do that, because they're probably not thinking of them. They probably didn't even remember that they had to take care of that, that the pets need fed or whatever, you know, day-to-day things that you could think of. If you can think of practical ways like that, they may not have thought of them, and offer to do the practical things rather than just make a general offer, although that's probably much better than nothing. But be willing to reach in and help. But in this case, someone came in and took over their kitchen, took over their house, the household duties, and they very much appreciated that. At the viewing, he remembers two people that came through, and that's a recurring theme maybe from different people who have gone through this type of thing. I mean, one person they remembered came through, and they knew the person well and from a long time. But she had a lot of words and just went on and on and on. And they really didn't remember much of anything she said. But it just, they remembered that there was a lot of words. And the other person who he remembers was someone who had been there and had been supporting them through his daughter's illness and had been helping them get the things that they thought might help, had been trying to assist them in any way they could through that time. But when he came through the viewing line, he said, "I don't know what you're going through or what to say, but I want you to know that I do care." And his brother felt that he remembered those exact words, and that meant so much to him. Some way, if we can convey the feeling, many times we really don't know what the person is going through. Many times we really don't know exactly how they feel. But if you can communicate to them that you care, that means so much. That means so much. Many times you may miss, cards and things like that are very helpful. And it doesn't matter if they're not right away. Later on, they may be read more than some of the first group of cards that came in. It's good to send cards, but don't be afraid to send them if you forgot right away and send them later on. People need support later on. And that's probably another recurring theme you'll hear, is that people, after a bit of time, they feel like everybody else has forgotten and no one else remembers. They need support after an ongoing, they appreciate support, appreciate people remembering, appreciate people talking to them about it. Most people like that who have had a serious loss, many of them will be able to tell you how many years ago it was that they lost their loved one. And, they don't, like I said before, they don't forget. And they don't expect everyone else to remember. They don't expect other people to remember like they do. But if someone does remember and does send them a card on the anniversary date of it, of the loss, they appreciate that. It means something to them. It's a way that you can really speak to them. Just be careful what you say. It's probably better not to say too much. It's probably fewer words are better than more words. even good words and true words can be hurtful. I've heard one person express, you know, that they were told in the viewing line or wherever that, you know, their loved one is better off now. And, you know, their reaction to that or their feeling was kind of like, you know, we'd all be better off if... it's just like I said, your heart's raw, and some of the true words and some right words, some Bible still can be hurtful. And just be sensitive to that. That doesn't mean it's wrong to say that, and I've said many, but just be sensitive to that. Many times, even for a long illness or something like that, and then the passing of a loved one, it seems to us like they should have been looking forward to the passing, and they'd be, but I know in some instances anyway, you know, even through a long illness and, you know, a death that we expected, it still comes as a real, would you say shock, but a real, I mean, it's just the family was hoping for a better outcome. Very calm way of saying it. But it still can be a shock to the family. And so, I'll just let it go at that. Be careful about identifying with a hurting family if your situation had a bad outcome. We experienced a bunch of that in relation to our situation. You know, it's just so, you know, other people would come and say that they had a situation similar. And, you know, but the question is, did their child survive or did he not? And, although many of the people that actually have gone through a situation like that, they could identify very well, and they were very much appreciated their visits. But just be careful about that. I know one time some years ago, my wife and I had gone to visit another family, our age group, who had a daughter that was diagnosed with cancer, had just been diagnosed, and we were visiting with, walked in and started to visit with them a bit, and we hadn't planned on saying it. We hadn't planned, but my wife, in her early years, childhood years, she had lost a 3-year-old sister to liver cancer, and so that came to our mind while we were there, and we, you know, tried to identify with them by bringing up that story, and they were at the stage in their grief where that was not the right thing to say. And we could tell immediately they went into reaction mode and were trying to find reasons that they could hang on to the hope that this would not have the same outcome that of the story we were trying to identify with them with. And just be very sensitive to relating a, quote, similar story with a bad outcome. It can be very difficult to accept. With, say, like even with, say, brain injuries, it's very hard for us to, or we have to be very careful how we relate to other people that have brain injuries because they're so different, and many of them are not nearly as serious as what we experience. Some are much worse, but you just want to be very sensitive to how that comes through. One of the things we found is how healing tears are. You supporting someone who is going through grief, expect that they'll be shedding some tears. And it may be, if you shed some tears with them, that may be wise. That may be just fine. But tears are healing. in a situation like that. Do keep visits short, and again, that can be different for different people. You might get there and you realize that they are just hungry to visit with someone and they want you to stay, and that's fine. But many times it's better to keep the visit short than to have it too long. Better to say less and weep with them a bit than to say too much. Be careful how much information you dig for. It's kind of situations are ones that have a story behind them, a story to, and sometimes we're glad to talk about that. People that are going through grief often are glad to talk about that. But when you get a sense that someone who didn't have time to talk to you before doesn't have time to talk to you in other situations, but they come and they have all kinds of questions, and you kind of get the sense that they're going to go and be enlightening a lot of other people about it, that doesn't feel real good. If you're close to them and you've been close to them, feel free to ask questions, but be sensitive to that, and don't ask a lot of questions if you haven't been real close in times gone by. So the subject tonight is to support the grieving, and the Bible teaches us to do that. Jesus gave his disciples what they needed, and he has given us what we need, his presence, his love, his comforter, and the promise of eternity, along with many other scriptures and promises throughout the Bible that we hang on to and we cling to. And just encourage you to be there for each other. We don't know who will face what. Be in a hospital waiting room in the trauma section was, after a while you start noticing a pattern. After a while you start noticing when new groups of family come in, and they go through a lot of similar experience. And after you're there a day or two, their experience changes a bit. And it's just, but you realize that we're, all the ones that were there, were not there by their choice. They were there because God had worked in their family's life, and they were all there not because of their own choice. God works in our lives, and we need to learn to respond to that. Many times, as far as if you're ever in a situation like that, remember that many people come, and if someone gives some remarks that hurt, that don't feel good, remind yourself that they probably meant well. They probably didn't realize how that was going to sound to you. Many times my wife and I reminded each other of that, that a person didn't mean it that way. They meant it well, and because of our condition, where we were at, it came through and sounded different, had a different meaning. And we appreciate those who, you have to learn to appreciate those who have mean well. And that's what we do. That's what we do as we come and share and support each other. So, almost feel like should have a question and answer session or something. It's a big subject, and there's many other ways, directions we could go, many other things we could share. But that's what I have for tonight. So God's blessing to you.